Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m, and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. From maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest today is Tiki Trevowan, guide dog owner and host of the Draycott Diaries podcast, all about life in the Somerset village of Draycott on the Mendip Hills. Tiki had an exciting career in television before she started to lose her sight due to an incurable eye condition, which will eventually lead to total blindness. In Tiki's Tracks of My Life, we'll go on a journey from schoolgirl crushes on 1960s pop bands to a couple of highlights from her TV career, then to the arrival of her guide dog Jackie, and of course, not forgetting her podcast, The Draycott Diaries. Tiki will also reflect on how important her close friends have been for her over the years, standing by her when she started to lose her sight, as well as fond memories of her pet dog Smash and a tribute to her late father. Hello Tiki, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Toby.
One thing I will say to our listeners, you might hear Tiggy's cockerel crowing in the background and various other noises from her home. So don't worry if you hear that. But Tiki, how did you find it selecting your tracks?
Well, first of all, I'm very honoured to be invited on to select my tracks for this programme. I found it a really interesting journey, actually, Toby, because I think, you know, when you select a track, you inevitably have to think, why am I selecting that track? So it was a bit like going back through a personal diary, really back to my really, really early years.
And your first track does take you back to school days and schoolgirl crushes back then. Could you tell me what life was like for you at school and, you know, when you were having those schoolgirl crushes?
I'll be honest, Toby, and actually say school days weren't necessarily the happiest of my life. You know, obviously I've developed sight loss in my later years, but I had hearing loss at school. So what I used to do was play a lot of records then that would kind of lift my spirits. And I sort of lived a bit of a fantasy world, really, you know, with these records. And one of them, which is the track I believe you're referring to, is that The Monkees?
It is The Monkees, the first ever boy band, I think.
Oh, I know. And they were, and I think part of my just getting through school and everything was that I would play that record over and over again. And I was completely in love with Davy Jones and Mickey Dolenz. And every time I played Daydream Believer, it just put me in another place, I think. And as I said, I think when we were talking a few weeks ago, I was lucky enough in my later years, in my professional years, to work with both Mickey and Davy as adults.
What was it about them back then as a schoolgirl that did it for you? And how was it meeting them in the flesh, as one might say, later on in life?
What it was like, Toby, was the crushes. I think they were just beautiful. Davy Jones was your classic dark-eyed, dark-haired, shiny shampoo hair. And Mickey was sort of a bit mad and had curly hair. And both of them, together with the rest of the band, they just all seemed to be having such fun. Because obviously it was in the days where I'm not even sure they played their own instruments. I certainly don't think they composed the music. So, unlike boy bands now that we have, like McFly, for example, who really do compose and write their own stuff, in those days, I think it was pretty fabricated, if I'm honest. But it cast me into a fantasy world. And they were handsome, they were good looking, they were always having fun, they were always lovely to the girlfriends that they had. Nobody ever had a broken heart. They got into mischief, but nobody was ever damaged. So I think it was that kind of fantasy life, what it could be to be with somebody like Davy and Mickey, having a bit of a lark.
But it rains and I rise, wipe the sleep out of my eyes. My shaven razor's cold and it stings. Cheer up, sleep.
Daydream Believer there by the Monkees, and maybe the first boy band that ever was, I suspect. Tiki, I know you are now a guide dog owner with Jackie by your side, and I know you got her since you started losing your sight. What was it like, you know, putting your trust in a guide dog for the first time? Because I think you've had dogs during your life.
Yes, that's absolutely right. I have had dogs in my life for as long as I can remember. I should say I have two dogs now sleeping on the sofa. Daphne, who I call my retired guide dog, was in fact a pet dog. She, but was not Leamington trained, so she's not what I would call an official guide dog. But she instinctively sensed when I was losing my sight what I needed. So she was doing the natural sort of guiding me around things and letting me know when something was coming or there were people nearby. But of course, when the sight then got to a point where I needed additional help and Daphne was getting older, that's when Jackie came into my life. I think, Toby, I think there is a slight, not amongst, I think, the non-sighted world and certainly not us as guide dog service users, but I think there is this perception that a guide dog arrives at your door with a bow on its head going, ready to drive, you know, and they instinctively know where you want to go and stuff. Whereas, as again, you know, we all, those of us who are listening now are guide dog owners, we do know that really the work starts when you're partnered, when your dog leaves Leamington at about, you know, and they're puppy walk, all the process they've been through. I mean, Jackie was two, I think, when we were partner. I would say the work really started then. And I would honestly say that was quite a surprise to me because I'd never had a guide dog before. And I just assumed they would somehow know what I wanted. And of course, a lot of the training is that getting to know each other and also being taught how to drive the dog by the trainers. But I found that process absolutely fascinating. And of course, on the course I was with when I was training with Jackie, I was on course, I stayed in a residential place. And I was there with other guide dog users who were on to, like yourself, Toby, their third guide dog. Some people were on to their seventh guide dog. Some were like me who are first time guide dog users. So I think that was a really interesting process to go through. But we've been together, she's five, so we've been together 3 years now. And I cannot imagine, I couldn't live without her. I mean, simply couldn't, because my sight has even, you know, it's escalated in a downward since I've had her. So it's been a really good timing to get her, really, because I'm going blinder and blinder, and she understands that process and ups her game the more and more I need more help. So I could not live without her.
And your next track takes you back to memories of Smash, which I think may have been your first dog you had. How old were you when you had Smash, and what type of dog was Smash?
Smash holds a very important part of my life, and I'm going to try not to cry. No, she was my, no, it's fine. She was my collie. She was one of my loves of my life. It was when I was married. It's when I was still sighted. And when we split up, then obviously I kind of always wanted the dog more than the husband. And I took on Smash, who was by then I suppose she was about 5 years old. And I was working full time at the BBC. I didn't know how I was going to cope. Put in a little notice in the local shop saying, could anybody help me with dog care? And a very nice gentleman stepped forward. But she meant so much because she went through the breakdown of my relationship. And right up to the point, then I got little Daphne. But I think she understood that I was going through a huge emotional upheaval. And I think that's what dogs do, you know, especially with working dogs that we work with. They're very porous to, I think, our feelings. And she just got me through it, is all I can say. She just got me through the breakdown of my marriage. And she had this extraordinary energy. And the track you're going to play now is that when I knew she was going to die because she had cancer at the end, it was last week of her life. Aww. Took her for the best walk I've ever had with her. I mean, when I say walk, it was just a gentle stroll because I knew at the end was very near. She lay down and she didn't die in the water before I said that, but she lay down in some very beautiful, cool, fresh water. And then I managed to pop her back in the car because I drove. This was her favourite spot that I was took to. It's this beautiful, shallow water, but she loved water. And she just lay in the water while I just watched her and had a paddle around. Put her back in the car. And then I played the track, "You're About to Hear." And it just immediately put me back in the place when she was a puppy, when she was well and she was playing with her frisbee, which she was addicted to. And I had a really surreal moment playing that. And I was dancing, you know, as much as you can do when you're driving a car, because obviously I was still driving then. And Smash was just lying, she was fine, but she was just lying quietly in the back of the car. And then when we got home, she was very sleepy. And the next day she was by the dishwasher, just laid down, and she went to sleep and never woke up again.
Jump by Van Halen there, and Memories of Smash there for you, Tiggy. The next track you have chosen, Tiggy, is one that I think lifts you up a little bit when you might be feeling sad. Have there been moments in your life when you have felt really sad, and this track, how has it been able to pick you up?
I think it's because music has puts you on a different level, doesn't it? And I've had several patches in my life where I've suffered. I hate the word suffered, challenged. I've been challenged by a really massive depression. I would say the biggest two were, you know, my marriage breaking down. And then the second one was the loss of my sight and a diagnosis that I will go fully blind. I'm down to 10% now. And I find a piece of music can allow me to laugh about things, but equally can make me cry about things. You know, sometimes if you listen to a really sad piece of music, you just cry and cry and cry and cry. And somehow that's very therapeutic. And that is what music means to me. And also, like that Van Halen track, it can take you back to a place instantly that I don't think any other medium can.
And the track, of course, is Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. What is it about this particular track that, as we say, puts a smile on your face and, you know, gives you a sort of positive outlook?
Just that word, Here Comes the Sun. I think however bad life gets for any of us, if we, you know, most of us don't record a diary, but I think if we can remember there were times when life was good and that however bad you feel at this moment in time, you know that there will be another good day, but it may be on the wheel, so to speak, you know, of life where the ups and downs. And that just that, Here Comes the Sun, means to me, okay, you're in a really bad place at the moment, but just remember, life has been good and the sun will come out again. And also, I'm turning into a huge names dropper, Toby, and I do apologise, but I did also get the opportunity to work with Paul McCartney and Linda when they were in Wings. So it has also has that lovely connection. And, you know, what a lucky girl I was.
The Beatles there, and Here Comes the Sun, and a song that really does put a smile onto your face there, Tiggy. Your next track is one that I think reminds you of your father. What was your father like, and what sort of role did he have in your life when you were growing up?
Well, I'm going to tell you the good bit first. My father was a doctor for the deaf. He was profoundly deaf, which is why I have inherited some of his deafness. He was also an amazing ear, nose and throat surgeon, but he had some demons himself of depression that I think he wrestled with. And so he wasn't a very hands-on father, but I never doubted for a second that he loved me. I know he loved me very, very much indeed, but he came from a very Victorian background. And I think it was in those days when he was brought up, it was very much children are seen and not heard. Mm. And I think he found parenting difficult. I don't think it was a happy marriage with my mum. I think they married just post-war quite quickly. I think they both accepted that, so they live quite separate lives. But, you know, he would go to work and he would come in and he would go upstairs and change, and sometimes his personality would change. And I think it's quite difficult to live with a parent that's quite changeable, but I never doubted that he loved me. And also, I think this piece of music, for me, when he had his funeral, so many people turned up that I never knew about in his life, you know, and we're talking about the works that he did that he never, ever talked about. And I sincerely believe it was because he was a very modest, humble man. And this piece of music, I mean, it's so adaptable. It can be used in sad times. It's used in happy times. I've heard it used in pop songs. It's a really versatile piece of music. But I think your listeners will agree, and I know everybody will know it, that it's just the most beautiful piece of music.
And as you say, it was played at his funeral. When you do hear it, what sort of memories does it bring back to you?
I think pride, because I think I've shared, you know, they often say you get to know your parents when they die. I think some of the nicer part of my personality, some of the more caring personality I've got, I think comes from him. And I didn't realise that until he died, because, as I said, I've got to know him better, because I've got to know myself better, and because I've been through some challenges in my life. I think that is why. And this piece of music is, you know, it can be played at funerals. It was my gift to my father, this piece of music. But I hope it's not just sad. I hope it sums up that often that person lives on in us, and our learning about ourselves gives us the opportunity to reflect on how that came into our DNA. And that's what this piece of music means to me.
Pachelbel's Canon D there, and memories of your father for you, Tiggy. Tiggy, your next track is the theme tune to your podcast, The Draycott Diaries, which I think you started not long after your sight started to deteriorate. Why did you want to start up Draycott Diaries? And is it a way of maybe taking those skills from your TV career into audio and another strand for you?
100%. It started, Draycott Diaries is a podcast series. I think we've done nearly 40 episodes now. The reason it started was a combo of things. And one, obviously, the most obvious one is my sight loss. But when I stepped away finally from television, which was in 2017, because it was just untenable, up to that stage, I'd had an incredibly lucky and successful, certainly a very good career, let's say. And at one point, I was working on Antiques Roadshow in the summer as the event manager. And then in the winter, I was working with people like Bear Grylls, doing survival shows and going off around the world, doing really quite tough, as I said, survival. And people were endlessly fascinated in this. So I would do talks and people were kind enough to come and listen to me banging on. I got quite good at them. I did have a nice PowerPoint thing as well. But obviously with sight loss, I was very much reliant on people being available to come press the buttons, because I would never know how to do that. I would now, because I've got the technology, but I didn't know how to do it then. Anyway, kind people listening to me. And I thought, do you know, everybody in this room, I mean, it's like what we're doing now, isn't it, has a life story. And I thought, if I ever have the opportunity, I'm going to go and find out. I live in a beautiful community. I live in the parish of Rodney Stoke, and Draycott, my little village in Somerset, is a hamlet. And so I thought, right, okay, I had to step away from telly. Obviously, that was a bit of a recovery process, because in a nutshell, I lost everything when I got my diagnosis, because telly, you earn good money, and I was living a very good lifestyle, had a very nice barn conversion, and but I was, you know, maxing it out on finance. And of course, I couldn't work anymore. So literally, I faced bankruptcy. And that was a very, very low, very low, very low time. But Draycott Diaries, when I sort of pulled myself out of that, I thought, do you know what? Let's see if I can do something along recording a life story. Phoned up somebody in the village who I knew did amateur dramatics, said, look, can you help me? He said, okay. I said, let's make two programs. He said, all right. And I managed to find a little device I could record on. I didn't know, you know, what to do after that, Toby. I could record it on something, but what on earth do you do after that? And anyway, between the two of us, we kind of worked out how to do it. We found a man who's left the social services and moved to Scotland to get away from it all. He still does a little bit of podcast hosting. Got hold of him. And I built then this team of volunteers. And we have made a really successful podcast series, which is getting a lot of attention now, which I'm really lucky because I think podcasting has got very overexposed now. But I started when it was still quite unknown. And of course, as you know, podcasting is really, it's just radio on demand. and I have found 39 live stories. People keep saying, aren't you running out of stories from one village? And I said, no. Because one story leads me to another, leads me to another. And the lovely thing about it is you don't have to listen to them in sequence. You can just sit down with a cup of tea. And I like to think they're like a little accompaniment to whatever you're doing in the house. But what's fun, Toby, is I can see where people are listening. And I've got a good audience. I mean, obviously, the majority is in this country, but a lot in America. A lot in Taiwan, interestingly enough. But what I love the most is I've got two that says unknown, and I like to think they're listening in the space station. Because who wouldn't want to listen to a lovely series about a rural village, you know, where we eat strawberries and drink cider? So Draycott Diaries is a little bit of something special that I started making when I thought I had nothing left in me and I would never work again. I suddenly have a broadcasting career ahead of me. I'm very proud of Draycott Diaries.
And I grew up on the Mendip Hills, which is a lovely place to grow up. And I wondered if you now have a different view of the Mendip Hills since losing your sight and whether you see things in perhaps a different way?
Well, it may be a myth. And I may have lots of people shouting at this recording now. But my feeling is that my other senses, since I've lost my sight, seem to have increased. My sense of smell seems to be much more vivid. And my hearing, you know, I'm rather reliant, obviously I wear two hearing aids, but I'm very reliant on my hearing. So I would say that yes, and I had never really thought about it, but of course, naturally, smell and sound seems to be much, much increased. I mean, I have 10% sight, which means if I go out in the Mendips and I'm doing a regular track that I do, because I do a lot of hill walking, I can sometimes let Jackie off completely. And with a cane, I can still walk reasonably confidently because she's got amazing recall. And I'm lucky enough, as I said, just to have a little perception of light. So it's a bit like looking through a Vaseline lens. I think that's how they used to do old movies, isn't it? They would put Vaseline on the lens. So I think it's very different, Toby. But of course, it's been a very slow process because, you know, I wasn't born blind. This has been a process really only in the last 15 years. But yeah, and do I appreciate it more? Big time, because I don't know how much longer I'm even going to have, you know, the perception that I have now. So, yeah, and aren't we lucky? And I know you and I talked about this. I mean, I live at the foot of the Mendips, and then which is south facing, and then it just slopes off straight to the Somerset Levels, looking out to Glastonbury Tor. So it's as you know, Toby, it's a really special place in the world here, and you kind of feel its history under your feet. So, yeah, thanks for that question. Never thought about it, but definitely, yeah, I definitely, definitely, definitely appreciate it more.
The theme from the Draycott Diaries there. Tiggy, we now come to a track that I think you have been known to get up on the dance floor on nights out with your friends. How important is it for you to have your friends around you?
Terribly important. I don't think I would be able to cope without friendship. What I have found interesting is, I mean, especially during COVID, because obviously food was brought to me and all those lovely things by very, very good friends. But I think also, I think we should make note that when something happens like this, there are those who can cope with it, friends who cope with it, those who I find it quite difficult. I think everybody has this big fear about losing their sight, driven by films people have seen of guys coming back from the First World War with bandages over their eyes going, so I think there is this great fear of sight loss, actually. I think people are really frightened of it. And I think that I've had friends who've not gone away completely, but definitely have had less contact with me. I think I found it. But then I've had the beauty of friends that I thought maybe might find it difficult, who have just stepped up and given and given and given. I mean, an example which I love is a friend of mine's got quite a sort of austere husband. He's quite sort of strict and he hates dogs, absolutely hates dogs with a vengeance. And I went round to their house one day, really new, when I had Jackie dog, my guide dog, with me. And I went to the door to deliver something and he opened the door and he went, "Tiggy, I want to say something to you." And I said, "What?" And he said, "I hate dogs. I really, really hate dogs." And I said, "Mark, I know you hate dogs." And he said, "But I want you to know Jackie is welcome in this house at any time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week." And you know what I mean? That was his way of saying, "I accept, you know, we love you, come on in." Mm-hmm. Whereas I've had other friends when I've arrived at a party once with Jackie, and they said, "Well, what are you going to do?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And they said, "Well, where's Jackie going to go?" And I said, "Well, she's going to come into the party." And they went, "Oh, well, could you come round the back?" And I literally had to stand on the patio with Jackie with a glass of Prosecco in my hand. So I think honestly, Toby, I think I couldn't live without my friends. Most of them have embraced this and run down the road with me and have been there to catch me. But some, as I've just said, have been a little disappointing.
And the track, of course, is ABBA's Dancing Queen. And I believe you may have danced solo to this at a big birthday. And I wondered if you were able to do all the moves, and did you learn all those moves? And were people surprised, or did they think, "Wow, Tiggy's able to do all those moves"?
I don't think they were surprised, Toby. I think they just knew. No, I mean, I was in very high heels. It was my 60th birthday party. And the friends I've been talking about now, we have always danced to ABBA at the pub down the road, have a sort of various music evenings, pub quizzes, New Year, whatever, you know, and they have no music system. They have an old ghetto blaster and they've only got one CD, I think, and it tends to be ABBA. So we've all got used to the moves over the years. So I started on my own dancing, but I think to cover my embarrassment, because of a woman at 60 giving it what I was giving in high heel shoes, potentially could have ended in disaster. So more support, I think they stood up and danced with me. But it was a very, very special evening. But my goodness me, my ankles hurt.
Dancing Queen by ABBA there, and hopefully everybody was up dancing too. Tiggy, we now come to that track that you would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
It's called Tears in Heaven, and it was written and played by Eric Clapton. This is such a special record for me. I think this comes with a very, very big P for privilege, because I was working at Bray Film Studios, and again, we were doing another music series, and we were lucky enough that Eric Clapton was going to come and do a program. I can't remember how many years ago it was now, but I mean, I'm not even going to try and put a year on it. But Eric had just lost his son. There'd been a terrible accident in New York. He had a little boy. I think he was only a toddler. And I think they weren't very good on health and safety in balconies, and they were in a high up flat somewhere in Manhattan. And I think the story goes the child had chased a toy and disaster had struck because he then fell and sadly died. But he wrote this most beautiful piece of music called Tears in Heaven, which was written for his son. And it just happened in the afternoon, we'd been rehearsing, and Eric just wanted to redo some of the musical stuff. So this one, you know, he did have a band with him, but this particular song, he would just sing on his own with his guitar. And so I was running the show, so I was just setting up things for the audience that weren't in. So we're talking really a totally empty studio. It's only him and I. And he started just playing it on his guitar. And it was an acoustic guitar. And I just sat down and just listened. I mean, I have no idea whether he was even aware I was there. But to hear a man who's had such a sad loss play something that he wrote for his son, and to be so privileged that I was just him and I to listen to it. And what was really lovely is after the show that night, which was a huge success, I didn't get a chance to say goodbye to him. And I spent, you know, quite a lot of time with him, and it really saddened me. And I was walking back across the car park with my headphones, and then this black Mercedes just roared up, nearly knocked me over. And it was Eric. I mean, he was obviously driving himself, just opened the window, just said, I just wanted to say, Tiggy, how lovely it was working with you, and thank you, you know, for all your help. And I've been driving around the lot for the last half an hour trying to find you just to say thank you. So what a special time, what a special track. So he gave me an enormous gift, and that's the gift I would like to hand on.
Well, thank you, Tiggy Trefowen, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, Toby, for inviting me. It really has been the most interesting time. Thank you. Thank you for asking me.